Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to another episode of the Daily Friend Wrap. I'm your host, Nicholas Lorimer, today joined by Mr. Michael Morris. And there's the news of today, which is, of course, the ongoing discussions about the Government of National Unity, the GNU, or the GNU, or however you want to say it. And there's a lot of conflicting information out there right now about what exactly is going on. We've had lots of stories over the weekend suggesting that the deal was on the verge of falling apart, that there was a lot of hostility between the parties, that the DA was very unhappy with how it felt that the ANC was trying to sideline it, and that the ANC thought the DA was making unreasonable demands. A letter was leaked to the public, which was reportedly from Helen Ziller. I'm not 100% sure if it's authentic, but it doesn't sound completely insane, where she claimed that these were the preferred portfolios of the DA, being mineral resources and energy, transport, public works and infrastructure, higher education and training, science and innovation, I think that's one portfolio, public service and administration, justice, home affairs, trade and industry, international relations, communication and digital technology. And also this insistence that John Steyn Hazenby also made the deputy president. Now, it's not clear whether this is a serious demand, whether it's part of a negotiating tactic, whether the letter is authentic. And just as we've had all this kind of fury and sound around, you know, how the discussion seems to be falling apart, we then also have a whole bunch of media stories today suggesting that actually a deal is very likely to be announced in the next, I think it was 24 to 36 hours, and that, you know, the parties are much closer to a deal than the reporting that those same outlets did the day before would suggest. So, Michael, I mean, you know, it's not unusual for sort of high-moving, secretive, historic events like this to have a lot of different speculation flying around them. But this is really quite a chaotic maelstrom of speculation going on right now. What's your take on all of this?
I mean, just as you were speaking, I was thinking of a line that I used in my column in Business Day yesterday from the Economist's Africa correspondent writing about this process. And he made the point that, you know, a process that in Europe could take weeks, months, or even years has happened in days in South Africa. So it's a kind of highly intensive. And as you say, there's a, you know, great deal of tactical jockeying going on in the background, some people being very cautious, other people being possibly quite deliberate in, you know, slipping things into the public conversation or into the public sphere in the hopes that perhaps it'll embolden one or another process or argument. You've got outsiders and insiders, people who think they ought to know and are fond of hearing their own voice and maybe saying things that are not strictly accurate, anxieties about timing. So there are a lot of factors which do make it quite difficult, I think, for anyone to really get a handle on what exactly is going on. And at the same time, we were chatting a bit earlier about my recollections of the time around the release of Mandela in February 1990. And the speculation for many, many weeks had been that, you know, his release was imminent. Would it be before de Klerk's opening of Parliament speech? Would it be after? Of course, once de Klerk had spoken in Parliament, it was then evident it was going to be quite imminent, but even then nobody knew, and we knew that Mandela was, you know, living on a house, a warder's house, and the property of Victor Verster prison, so he wasn't strictly speaking even a prisoner anymore. But even under those conditions and some access to him by ANC people, there was still this environment of huge uncertainty. And eventually, as we, you know, we were chuckling about this, eventually journalists are reporting one another. You know, something appears in the news in one platform, one newspaper, one broadcast house, and the next minute it's become the news. It's somebody else is repeating it, and it becomes slightly embellished, and its sources close to the action, and so on. So I think we're in that sort of phase, and not surprisingly, we get to an issue a bit later, which underscores the importance of this. But you know, this is a critical moment for South Africa. It's happened. It's come upon us quite quickly, although certainly we and our former boss, Frans Cornier, predicted it a long time ago. The IRR has long been tracking all the data which pointed to an electoral crisis for the ANC round about this time. So it kind of was anticipated, but how it's actually played out, I don't think anybody could have accurately foreseen. And even now, you know, we still aren't quite sure. So all very interesting, very exciting, and prone to, you know, all these elements of uncertainty and sort of speculative wildness, if you like.
It's interesting how the sort of zeitgeist, the mainstream zeitgeist, seems to have changed those. And you know, while we were looking up news for today, we came across comments by Clement Magnotella, who is, shall I say, not particularly well disposed towards the DA. He's not a big fan of them at all. And so, in fact, I would say he's generally pretty hostile to them. And yet, despite the fact that he says that he's very opposed to a whole bunch of DA policies, he basically thinks that the DA should be, sorry, the ANC should be sharing power with the DA and giving them significant portfolios. He said they are sending a message that we're not going to take minor ministries, so take us seriously, but they raised the bar so high to put the pressure on the ANC to share significant portfolios with them. But he believes that the DA must get some of the key portfolios, in his words, because the ANC has chosen this path and it must now sleep in the bed that it made. He said, quote, "I am personally against some of the policies of the DA. I think they would reverse the gains this country has made, but the ANC has made its choice. You make your bed, you must lie in it. The election result requires the power be shared in a new government. That means power cannot continue to reside solely within the ANC." And I think that was, in many ways, the most important function of this election. Was, you know, we can argue here or there about whether South Africa's kind of general policy outlook has changed and all these other things. But what it did do is it broke the monolithic idea that the ANC must sort of hold all the levers of power in itself. And, you know, when you've got people who are, shall we say, sympathetic to the worldview of the kind of ANC, EFF, MK bloc, saying things like, well, you know, the ANC must actually share power now, I think that is a shift. That suggests that the country is in very much a new place.
I absolutely agree. And there was another interesting case at the weekend. Mondli Makanya, the editor of City Press, very experienced journalist, been around for a long time. You know, very strong views, some which we certainly at the IRR would disagree with, but others that we would applaud. But interesting that somebody like him is also saying, you know, let's not have a kind of black inferiority complex here. This is a new place. The fact that the DA is coming in doesn't mean that, you know, we can all just fall down and froth at the mouth. This is the reality we've got to deal with, and this is, you know, potentially a very positive thing. So I think it is quite a wide ranging shift, as you say, which I think is very good. I mean, it's taken me a little bit by surprise. I think I did half think that there would be quite a big chunk of the intelligentsia that would, you know, feel betrayed, and there'd be this, you know, kind of shock horror. Where do we go now? Whereas people seem, I think it's perhaps, it's been coming slowly. It's been, you know, percolating through their minds for a long time, and now the reality is you know, finally caught up. But it is a sense that, you know, we are in a different place. The politics is different, and you know, that very simple sentiment from Clement Magnotella, the you know, where we are now means power cannot continue to reside solely with the ANC, and I think that's quite a big shift.
So we, of course, came across a story today which reminds us why all of this is actually so important and how important it is for us to change directions and not continue going down the path we've been going down. And this is a story about the latest quarterly labor force survey, which looks at South Africa's unemployment rate, published by the government every quarter. And the Eastern Cape is about to become the second province in the country in which there are more unemployed people than there are employed people. So we already have the Northwest province hitting that awful, awful milestone. On the expanded definition of unemployment, which includes people who have given up looking for work, not just those who are actively seeking work, in this quarter, 53.6% of people are unemployed. The Eastern Cape is now sitting at 49.1%. Look at some of the other provinces. The Northern Cape, the Free State, and KwaZulu-Natal are between 47 for KwaZulu-Natal, 43 for the Free State, and 42 for the Northern Cape. Mpumalanga, 45%, Limpopo 46%, and the Western Cape being the big outlier at around 26% unemployment, which is still incredibly high, but much, much lower than the rest of the country. So we really are facing an incredible crisis, which is causing an enormous amount of human suffering that we have, you know, hundreds and hundreds of thousands, millions of South Africans who are without jobs, without any stable income, and without any possibility that they will escape the trap of poverty. And if this government, this new government, is not able to put in the policy changes that will make that will make unemployment go down, this is only going to get worse, and the country is going to fall apart. Am I being a bit too dramatic there, Michael, or do you think I'm correct?
No, yeah, I think that's absolutely right. You know, all our polling, and not ours alone, the polling by Afrobarometer, among others, has shown repeatedly that, you know, the real concerns of people are their material conditions. There is evidence of immiseration on a very significant scale. Our colleague Gabriel Krauser often refers to the stunted children being born because of the malnutrition. Maurice Ruett always reminds us, to when we look at figures, behind that every figure is a human being who's desperate, who's hungry, whose family is hungry, who's got steadily decreasing choices. So all these things bring us face to face with, to coin a phrase, the lived reality, the lived experience, the real experience of people right across the country, and it's a very, very pressing thing. And you know, as you've said, the big challenge is, you know, everything now is either going to be focused on finding the solutions to these kinds of things, or it's going to be a failure. And just in the past 24 hours, a piece yesterday on the Daily Friend by our columnist Sean Hagedorn, saying the path forward must provide wide dispensations from anti-competitive BEE and labour legislation for new value-adding export initiatives. The ANC can be persuaded to support this for many compelling reasons, chiefly that it is really the only path that can provide create millions of jobs. In a letter that Terence has written, Terence Corrigan, another colleague, the success of the GNU will be bound to its ability to maintain a pragmatic, future-focused policy orientation. So all these things are suggesting, quite rightly, that we're heading into a period not of abstractions and ideas about, you know, finally rendered principles, but very pragmatic concerns, on the ground, bread and butter problems that ordinary South Africans are facing, and that we all are invested in, because we're all will either stand or fall on the success of overcoming these problems.
And I do believe that, you know, from what I believe to be the solutions to this country's problems, reforming the labor laws, protecting property rights, deregulating many parts of industry, lowering taxes, et cetera, and what the IRR broadly believes, we're not going to get all of these at all from this government. We can definitely move some of those indicators in the right direction. And it's going to require the DA to push for them. It's going to require the ANC to be willing to open their minds to some of these things, to be more pragmatic in selecting at least some reforms in this. And we can reassess when the country gets to 5 years from now. You know, if we just have different people managing the same policy, there's no difference.
That's exactly right.
So with that in mind, we eagerly look forward to whether the president is actually going to give us a cabinet to talk about in the next couple of hours. Who knows? Maybe not. But, you know, these are crucial days for South Africa's future. And I hope that the people at the negotiating tables all take that into their minds. All right. Thank you very much for listening. And we hope that you found this show interesting. That's a wrap. The Daily Friend Show and The Daily Friend are a project of the Institute of Race Relations, the IRR. The IRR is a think tank which was founded in 1929 to study race relations in South Africa and works to change government policy to improve race relations through non-racialism and to ensure the prosperity of all South Africans. If you like our work and would like to support us, please go to irr.org.za and click Support the IRR. Or you can go to thedailyfriend.co.za and click the Fund Us button.